All right, thank you everybody for coming. I'd like to thank Rabbi Halpert again. Leave it there. I'd like to thank Rabbi Halpert again for giving of his very busy time. Rabbi Halpert is also the Rav of the TABC Shul that on Shabbos, mostly for young couples and others who live around that area, as well as a member of RENOT. And a special welcome to his parents, who live not in Teaneck, but in Queens. Wow. Last time I checked. Okay, without further ado. Oh, next week is Rabbi Adler, and it's on the Haggadah.
Yeshus, my parents, my father, and my mother. Thank you very much to Howie for organizing this and tracking me down. Last Thursday, I called Howie in a panic Thursday morning saying, Howie, I have a big problem. I can't give the shiur tonight. He said, don't worry. You're supposed to give it next week, so it's fine. Source number one here is one of my favorite sources because I came across it three different ways. This source I first saw in Rav Herschel Schachter's Nefesh HaRav, right after the Rav passed away within a few years. Rav Schachter was one of the first people to start to write up the Rav's Torah. And in the beginning of the Sefer, he quotes this source. And then I subsequently saw it, J.J. Schachter, Rabbi J.J. Schachter, quoted it in a well-known article on the significance of history and whether history is a Jewish subject or not. And then I actually came across it in the original. This is Sefer Miromei Sadeh, which is the Netziv's commentary on Shas, on all of Shas. It's three volumes. The way they used to learn Gemara in the Yeshiva of Volozhin is that they would start at Maseches Brachos, and they would just go straight. And they would end at Nida. And that's the way his parish on Shas goes, and it starts their way. But if you look at the beginning, his son, so the Netziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin's son, is Rav Chaim Berlin, as a famous yeshiva in Brooklyn named after him, many yeshivas in Israel named after him, Rav Chaim Berlin. So after the Netziv passed away, Rav Chaim Berlin got a letter. He got a letter from one of the students of the Netziv. And the letter said, could you please write for us a biography of this great rabbi, the Netziv, from Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. We'd like to include that biography in the introduction, in the beginning of some of his Sfarim on Halacha. And Rav Chaim Berlin responded, and you have it in front of you. He says, he was not inclined at all to write this. He did not want to write a biography. In the middle of the first line, Va'anochi hinini me'id be'idut ne'emana, I testify Shehagaon Rabbi Kiva Eger Zal Merom the Kadosh Haya Beinei Mar Avi Gaon Zal Adli Mo'od. Rabbi Kiva Eger was held in tremendously high esteem by the Netziv. Uvechol Eche Hiskiro Haya Mirta Kulo Gufo Migodo Kedushas Taraso V'Tzidkaso. And whenever you even mention Rabbi Kiva Eger's name, the Netziv would tremble in fear because of the greatness of Rabbi Kiva Eger. V'Sefer Tshuvasav Lo Pasak Ma'al Shulchano. And Shelos Tshuvas Rabbi Kiva Eger was always right there on the Netziv's table. Umargala haya bepuma shekol hamayam b'sefer tshuvas Rabbi Kiva Egerzal ba'ein chaderes lo rak dolos v'niflos. Anybody who would, the Netziv would always say, anybody who looks into the Shelos Tshuvas Rabbi Kiva Eger, not only would you find tremendous knowledge and halacha there, you might say shama me'emik yunei v'charitzo tzichlo habahir, you'd see his incredible insight and clarity of thought. But not only that, ki imgam yirat Hashem tahora, you would see his great holiness, va'anava, and his humbleness. Yimatzei b'chol shur v'shur in every line of the paper. Ve'en lecha sefer Musar gadol mimenu. He said, if you want to learn Musar, don't learn Mesilas Yesharim, don't learn Chovas Halavavos, just take out Shevis v'chiv Rabbi Akiva Eger, his halachic responsa, and just from the writing of Rabbi Akiva Eger in that halachic responsa, you'll find Musar as well. Ko hayu dvarav tamid. That's how he always talked about Rabbi Akiva Eger. He said he valued Rabbi Kiva Eger's opinion so much that if you had Rabbi Kiva Eger on one side of a machlokas and you had two, three, four, five, even six other achronim on the other side of the machlokas, he would value Rabbi Kiva Eger's opinion, and when you balanced out who you would hold like, Rabbi Kiva was worth three, four, five other achronim. That's how much he valued Rabbi Kiva Eger. So why is he telling us all this? He's telling us all this. At the end of the day, Rabbi Kiva Eger, he viewed him as an angel. He viewed him as perfection. If you look, one, two, three, four, five lines from the bottom, all the way on the right side of the page. And after I just told you everything about how the Netziv viewed Rabbi Akiva Eiger, Be'oznai Shamati, with my own ears, I heard the following Mipiv HaKadosh, from the holy mouth of the Netziv. Be'es Shehigia Le'enav Toldos Rabbi Akiva Eiger Zal, Shiatzala Or Berishona Besefer HaGot, Rabbi Akiva Eiger Al Yoredeya, Shinitfas Be'Berlin. When a new volume of Rabbi Akiva Eiger came out on Yoredeya, and it was published in Berlin, and what did they decide to do? They decided to put a small biography in the front of that responsa, just to tell you who Rabbi Akiva Eiger was, and where he lived, and what his context was. And the Netziv was given that sefer. Lo ratzal lahabit alav af b'ma'of kal. He had no interest at all in reading the biography. Va'amar shekol zeh bichlal hamor b'Yushalmi. He said this is all subsumed under the rule put forth in the Yushalmi. Ein osin nefashos litzadikim. You don't make monuments for the righteous. Shedivrehem hen zichronam. Their words, their ideas, their thoughts, their concepts, their philosophy. That's how you remember great people, not via biography, not via monuments, not via all sorts of other types of memories. According to the Netziv, what do I care what his birthday was and when he died? Otar pirtzuf tmunaso, what he looked like, if he was tall, if he was short. The ha'ikar lasum ayin b'lev al divrei Torah. So the key is to understand what he has to say. Va'amar shekol ha'ninim ha'elo hem metchavlot ha'satan. He says, and all these biographies, not good. So the Netziv, so Rav Chaim Berlin, in response to the request that he write a biography about his father, the Netziv, politely says, no, I'm not writing a bio about my father, the Netziv, because my father, the Netziv, had no interest in biography. My father, the Netziv, disdained biography. And even Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who he held to be of the utmost, the high of the high, was not interested in at all. That's what Rav Chaim Berlin writes. If you look at source number two, so the Netziv wrote a perish on the Shiltos. We have it back there over there. It's three volumes published by Mosada Rav Kook. And in that commentary, there's a long introduction. And here we have a paragraph describing the Netziv's commentary on the Shiltos. He says, Ukeshem shehiktim hiktim shanim rabot. He spent many years, yamim v'leilot leva'er sifro shel Rav Chai Gaon mitoch havana rabah. He spent a tremendous amount of time. He spent about 15 years publishing this work on the Shiltos. Mitoch hashkafa bihira, and with a tremendous clarity. Ken chipesu matzaz haderech hanichona lahachanat habayor hazeh. And after all those years, he figured out how to explain the Shiltos, which is a very complicated work. But then he says, gam hachsharas ha-mitzvah haita chaviva lefanav. But not only the mitzvah of writing the commentary was dear to him, but the hechsher mitzvah, the preparation of the mitzvah. What's the preparation of the mitzvah? V'lo kiderech ha-mechabrim ha-acherim. Not like other authors, asher ein lahem inyan im hazman v'im ha-mikrim, who don't care about context, don't care about the time. Im ha-tzkufa v'im ha-dor shel ha-chachamim ha-rishonim asher et meimeim hem shosim v'divreim hem hogim. Not like all those other people who just ignore the context of the individual, of the person. But rather, Nigash lachkor veladat et hanogel lechayav Rabbi Chai Gaon. The Netziv made sure to understand when Rabbi Chai Gaon lived. Likvo etzmano, to establish his time period. Velachkor al mikomo, and to understand where he actually lived. Madua alami Babel Eretz Yisrael. Why did he make aliyah from Babel to Eretz Yisrael? Vechen laamod al tochen hayetzira hagadola hazot sefer hashiltos. So who is this chutzpedik? After Rav Chaim Berlin just told us that the Netziv doesn't care at all about biography and that he disdained the biography of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, some guy comes along and has the gall to say, actually, the Netziv was a scientific scholar and he delved into the background of the Shiltos and the location of the Shiltos and all these things having to do with the Shiltos. So who has the chutzpah to write such a thing, to contradict Rav Chaim Berlin, the son of the Netziv? Anyone know who wrote the book Rabban Shel Yisrael about the Netziv? It's a biography of the Netziv. Well, it's written by his son, his other son, Rav Meir Bar Ilan. Rav Meir Bar Ilan and Rav Chaim Berlin lived 40 years. There was about 40 years distance between them. Obviously, Rav Meir Bar Ilan was from a second wife. His name was originally Rav Meir Berlin. When he made Aliyah, he Hebraicized it to Bar Ilan. And this is what Rav Bar Ilan writes, that the Netziv was actually incredibly interested in all of this stuff, all of this history, all of this scientific knowledge, because it lends to the context. So here you have Rav Chaim Berlin, giving one vision of his father, and Rav Meir Berlin, Rav Meir Bar Ilan, giving a diametrically opposed vision of his father with respect to this issue of, do you care about who the individual who's talking is, or do you only care about what the individual says? So just keep that in mind, that you have these two contexts about context in mind, and I hope if we have time we'll get back to why this is relevant. But how could you have, I mean, we see this. You see contradictory perspectives on great individuals. And we see it all the time. But this seems to be a very, very stark contradiction. So you could say, look, Rav Chaim Berlin was much older, Rav Meir Bar Ilan was younger, the Nitziv maybe changed, maybe they're just projecting their own opinions. So it's possible that all of those are possible, but maybe there's some nuance here that we can call out a little bit in the course of our Shir on Haggadah, which will come back and give us some greater insight into how you could possibly have this seemingly diametrically opposed and contradictory understanding of the Nitziv. So let's jump into some of the sources. We're still not at the Haggadah yet. We're going to start in Megillas Esther because that's the progression of the calendar, Purim, and then Pesach. So the 10 sons of Haman get killed, and the pasuk goes out of its way to tell us that what did the Jews not do? They defended themselves. They killed the 10 sons of Haman, but what did they not do? They did not take the property. Uvabiza lo shalchu et yadam. How many times does the Megillah bother to tell us that? At least 3 times. When they killed the sons, they didn't take the money. Vayikahalu hayehudim asher b'shushan gaba yom ha'arba'asa l'chodesh adar, and the Jews in Shushan also gathered on the 14th. Vayahargu b'shushan shlosha me'orish, and they killed in Shushan 300 people. And what did they not do? Uvabiza lo shalchu et yadam. They didn't take the property. And then again in Perek Tet Zayin, Ushar hayudim asher b'minos ha'melach nikalu v'amoro nafsham, and everybody else who lived outside of Shushan, they also had a big war, and they also fought, and then they finally were victorious, and they wested. V'harog b'soneihem chamisha v'shivim elash. They killed a tremendous number of people. But what did they not do? Uvabiza lo shalchu yadam. They did not take the property. Clearly, there seems to be something significant here, that it's okay to defend yourself, it's okay to free yourself, it's okay to redeem yourself. Leave the money alone. Don't get involved in the money. If you look at Sefer Yehoshua, Bnei Yisrael come into the land of Israel, the first city that they have to face is the city of Yericho, and they're told to conquer Yericho. Pasuk Perek Vav Pasuk Yichet, Verak Atem Shamru Min Hacherim. Watch out for the spoils. Pentacharimu lekachtem min acherim, lest you take from the spoils. Vesamtemes machane Yisrael acherim, because if you take from the spoils, it's going to lead to the destruction of the camp. Vaachartemos, you'll undermine me. V'chol kesev v'zahav uchlei nachoshes ubarzel kodeshu laHashem. Don't take anything. The gold, the silver, and the copper, give that to God. But you do not take anything. And we know in fact what happens. Achan takes something, and then subsequently they lose in battle, and then there's a whole purge, and they have to find Achan. Clearly, what the Psukim are making very clear is, you can attack Yericho, you can destroy Yericho, you can defend yourself against Haman, and you can destroy the people who are coming against you, but what do you not do? You don't take the property. Right? Why do you think that is? Well, these are just 2 examples. Any other examples when you don't take the property?
If you take the property, it colors your motive.
Right. All of a sudden, wait, it's like, is this purity of arms? Is it really self-defense? Maybe I always really liked my neighbor's house. Maybe he wasn't one of the people who were trying to kill me, but I really wanted to expand my backyard and get the double plot. So you know what? Right. Any other reasons? Anything else?
It's tainted money.
It's blood money. Right? Where else do we see that they didn't take the property?
We have a case where they did, they didn't list, which may be another proof text, because it's a negative thing. It's where
Okay. Right? You could do a whole shiur just comparing and contrasting different times where they took and they didn't. One of the most famous times where they did not take also is Amalek. And there's a lot of comparison between Haman, Amalek, property. But where did they take the money? Well, Shaul took the money. He wasn't supposed to take the money. Vayomer le'Avram. Right? We're finally 20 minutes in. We're getting to Inyani Pesach. Vayomer le'Avram. And he said to Avraham, Yadoa teidak ger yezaracha be'eres lo'lahem. No, that your children will be what? Will be strangers in a land that is not theirs. Va'avadum, and they will be forced to work. Ve'inu osam, and they will pressure them, they will harm them, they will oppress them. Arba me'ot shana. But don't worry. Ve'gamas ha'goye she'yavodu dan anochi. But that nation that oppresses you, I will judge them. And you'll get to go out of Mitzrayim. No, it doesn't say that. It says, Ve'gamas ha'goye she'yavodu dan anochi. Ve'acharei chen yetzu. Ve'chush gadol. You will leave, and you will leave wealthy. You will leave with the money. You will leave with the property. And we know, if you look in Sefer Shmos, that the story, the Pesukim are very clear that they made a big deal about taking the money, right? And the Pesukim say that they emptied out the storehouses of Mitzrayim, and their whole Midrashim, how they borrowed, and Makas Choshech was all about, so they could find where the treasure were, and that they had to ask, and then we have all these Achronim that deal with, but if we borrowed the money, how did we not give the money back? Did we steal? Those are all fascinating questions that have to be dealt with in the text and in the Midrashim. But one thing is clear. They were supposed to take the money. Right? It's show me the money. It's all about the money. Why do you have this incredible contrast between Haman, Mordechai, story of Esther, the story of Amalek, so many other stories where they say, don't take the money. It's tainted money. It's blood money, purity of arms. It's going to taint your your rationale for doing this. You want to defend yourself. I understand. Don't take the, why all of a sudden here are they taking the money? And not only are they taking the money, God makes such a big deal about it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avraham, don't, this is Bris Ben Abasarim and Bereshis. This is the history of the Jews, I'm telling you. You're going to do X, Y, Z, they're going to become slaves, and then you're going to leave Berchush Gadol. Just leave out the words Berchush Gadol. If God wants to make them rich, food, you know, there's man falling down from the sky. There could be gold spoil. There's 1,000 ways that God could have enriched the Jews in the desert. They did not have to take the money. Why was it so important for them to take the money? The Alshech is bothered by this in Bereshis. And just to kind of create a straw man, he says, "Hayita ken shebishvil revach ma'ot ishtabdu." Do you want to think for a second that Avraham was making a calculation in his head? He was saying, "Well, my grandchildren and great grandchildren are going to be slaves. Ah, but you know what? It's worth it because they're going to be rich in the end." It's like, okay, we'll work really hard, but okay, you know, we'll make a lot of money. That's impossible to think. Ve'od ki ha'hon lakchu b'nei shalishim yotzei Mitzrayim. Uvamei yinachamu dor achad ubeish nitavdu v'lo nehenu. He says, even if you want to go down this counterintuitive idea that Abraham said, okay, you know what, it's okay. Many generations will work, but at the end of the day we'll be wealthy. Well, it's fine for the people who came out and became wealthy. What about the first, second, and third generations who just worked and were only slaves? They never got the money. He says, it can't be. He says, furthermore, Velo od, just the way the pasuk describes it, Elashi kreenu rechush gadol ke oseh ikir mikesev v'zahav. The whole emphasis is wrong. Here you have God speaking to Avraham, perhaps one of the most spiritual events in the history of mankind, Bris Ben Abasarim, and we're talking about the rechush gadol. Money's not important. Havel havelim. God's focused on the money. Vehema hevel lefanecha yitbarach. Says. That's it's meaningless. The whole, how could it be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so focused on the money? So because the Alshech is so troubled by this, he says, you know what, I have no answer, but let me give a darshanut answer. Keep reading, last line. Al ken amar sheharechush gadol hu rechush haruchani shehu zikuch hanefashos. It says, must be that when it says, well, it doesn't say gold and silver. It says, you'll leave with great property. So as a truly spiritual individual, what does great property mean? What's the most valuable property? Spiritual wealth. So even though the pasuk says, rechush gadol, it means spiritual rechush gadol. Okay. It's a nice drasha, but ain mikra yotzei midei pshuto. If I woke you up in the middle of the night and I asked you what does rechush gadol mean, I don't think anyone here would say, oh yeah, it means spiritual wealth. The pasuk doesn't say spiritual wealth. The pasuk says rechush gadol. The pasuk knows how to say spiritual wealth. So the Alshech is troubled by the question. He's so troubled by the question that he comes up with what we would honestly have to call a dochak answer, a forced answer. It's an answer, but it's a forced answer. So it shows you the strength of the question. The fact that the answer that he presents is already seemingly strained. It's a powerful question. So if you look at the next source, there's a source in Shir HaShirim. Amar Rav Berachiah. So Rav Berachiah says, this is in the Medrash on Shir HaShirim. Amar Yisrael lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bnei Yisrael said to God, Ribono shel Olam, mimash ata mevi ora le'olam, shimcha mitgadol be'olam. The more you bring light into the world, the more your name is made famous and enhanced and made great. More light, more acknowledgement of God. So what's the light? Umahi ha'ora, what is the light? Geula, redemption. The light that a God brings to the world is redemption. Shebisha'a sha'at mevi lanu ora ha'ora, at the time when you bring us light, harbe gerim ba'im umit gerim v'nosafim alinu. Many converts come and gather onto amongst us. Who are the examples that he gives? Kegon Yitro, v'rachav. Yitro shama ba'asa, right? We read by Yishma Yitro. Yitro hears what happens, and what does he do? He comes to the camp, right? Rachav, when she meets the spies, right? The spies break in. They break into her house. She finds them. She hides them. She says, "We all heard. We heard what happened. Let me help you," meaning, I want in. I'm going to join. I heard what happened. Rachav Shama V'Asya. So the Medrash is clearly saying, the more light that comes to the world, the more God is revealed and aggrandized. What's light? Light is Geula. When the world sees Geula, then the world acknowledges God's presence. That's what the Medrash says. So in the Haggadah Siach Yitzchak by Rav Yitzchak Meltzen, he lived 1870 to about 1920. He started in Europe. He made Aliyah. He was one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So in his Haggadah, he deals with this. And he says, V'kol ze al yedei ha-geula, shehi komimiyut uva'oshe v'kavod. He says, geula, redemption, brings komimiyut, brings... How would you translate komimiyut? Brings establishment, upstanding, proud, osher v'kavod, wealth and glory. Al ken ksiv va'olech eschem komimiyut. That's why the pasuk says, right? I will bring you up komimiyut. At the anu mitpalelim, we say, we daven at least two times, shetolichenu komimiyut la'atzenu. Where do we say that? Once we say it in benching, and once we also say it in Birchas Kriyashma, Shetolichenu Komimiyut Le'artzenu. The idea is we're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring us Geula, to bring us to the land, but not only to bring us to the land crawling and begging to get to the land, but Komimiyut Le'artzenu. Why do we want to be Komimiyut Le'artzenu? Says the Siach Yitzchak, because Komimiyut Le'artzenu, that enhances the Geula. More Geula, more Or. More Komimiyut, more Or. To take a 30-second tangent, what do we say in davening? We say, Shetolichenu Komimiyut Le'artzenu, to our land. Have you ever seen a different nusach of that? So if you look in any of the Israeli Siddurim, or next time you're in Israel, open up, not all of them do it, but there are some texts that say, wait a second, how can I daven komimiyut le'artzenu when I'm sitting in Yerushalayim? I'm sitting in Tel Aviv. I'm sitting in Tveria. What should I say? Komimiyut be'artzenu. Don't bring me up to the land in a strong, prideful manner, but allow me to walk within the land in a strong, prideful manner. V'tolichenu komimiyut be'artzenu, allow us to travel in the land in a proud fashion. And you could see, especially in the history of modern Israel, why there'd be a great desire to tweak that tefillah, because it's not enough to be in the land, but once you're in the land, you want to be able to have free access. You want to be able to drive on whatever road you want to drive. You don't want to have to think, do I want to go on route, on 434 or not? Do I want to go this way? Do I want to go that way? Tolichenu komimiyut be'artzenu. And the Achronim actually have a long back and forth as to whether you should switch the nusach or not. And if you move to Israel, and if you're living in Israel, should you switch it to komimiyut be'artzenu and not komimiyut le'artzenu? And it's interesting to see the different responses of the different modern poskim, Ashir for Yom Ha'atzma'ut, to analyze who switches the girsa and who doesn't switch the girsa. But what's clear is that the notion of tolichenu komimiyut le'artzenu, the notion of komimiyut, of pride, of being there in your full exposure, not hiding, not groveling, just being able to go, that's it. That's an element of ge'ula, says the Siach Yitzchak, and that's maybe or le'olam. And therefore, if we keep reading in the Siach Yitzchak, keep going down to the next source, he says, so when we came up from into Bayis Rishon, that was komimiyut le'artzenu. Shlomo built the Beit HaMikdash, that was komimiyut, that was grandeur, that was greatness. Bayis Sheni, not so much so. Bayis Sheni, we had to grovel for permission, we got permission, we went up, the first few years weren't so good, not so many people made Aliyah, the beginning was very tough. He says, what happened at that point in time? What did you not have at the time of Bayis Sheni that you had at some of the other geulas? You did not have any geirut. Right? When Bnei Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim, you had geirut. You had Yitro, you had Rachav. What other group of people were Mikayim at that time? Who else came up with the Jews out of Mitzrayim? Erev Rav. What were the Erev Rav effectively? They were Gerim. They were either Egyptians or other non-Egyptians who had been slaves in Egypt next to the Jews, or maybe they were there voluntarily. But at the end of the day, they were individuals who were of some other religion, who saw what was going on and said, I want in. Yitro wanted in. Rachav wanted in. The Erev Rav wanted in. They wanted in also. They wanted to be part of the Geula. There was Geula. It brought ore to the world. And other people said, I'm in. What did you not get at Bayit Sheni? There's not much conversation about Gerus at Bayit Sheni. In fact, you kind of have the opposite. Because when Ezra tells the local population who had intermarried, what should they do? What does he say to them to do? They should divorce. They should send away their foreign wives. What should have happened? They should have all been mitgayer. Seemingly, that wasn't a choice. Right? Seemingly, that wasn't a choice. He says, Bayit Sheni did not have the same nisim and niflot associated with it. There was a geula, but it wasn't on the same level. And therefore, it did not have this associated geirut associated. It didn't have a geirut associated with it. Which actually, and we have enough time to do this, leads to a slight nuance here. Because what we're saying is, when you have geula, you have geirus. Because when you have geula, you have basically Kiddush Hashem. The world sees, and there's a revelation, the world sees God's power in the world, and people want in. If you look in the parenthetical, in this paragraph right here, we're told, he says, V'afal pi she'em mekablim geirim b'Yisrael b'gdula. We generally have a klal that when do you accept geirim? Right? No one likes a front runner. When things are bad, if you want to convert and come in, we'll take you. But when things are good, all of a sudden we're worried that you're not coming in for the right reasons. Similarly, right? So, wait one second, right? He says, Ein mekablim geirim b'Yisrael b'gdula. And like the Gemara talks about, when Mashiach comes, all of a sudden everyone's going to want to convert. Everyone's going to be like, No, it's a little too late now, right? You had your chance. You can't wait till we're winning, right? You can't only be a Laker fan when they're good. Dallas Cowboys when they're good, right? Kimoli Mosa Mashiach. We don't accept Gerim and Yimosa Mashiach. It says Hainu Bastama, that's the Stam Halacha. Abal al pi ruach hakodesh, but sometimes we make exceptions by ruach hakodesh. Hayu yodim ezu lekarev. Kemosha amru b'medrash. Amar le hakodesh baruch hu Moshe. God says to Moshe, Anihu shekarafti es Yisro. I brought Yitro close, velo rechaktiv. I didn't push him off. Af atakar vehu. Right? Because you don't see, if you wanted to see the sources for the laws of Geirus, where you're supposed to push the Geir away, you would have thought that when Yisro showed up, by Yishma Yisro, Chohen Minyan Chosein Moshe, that when he showed up, instead of Moshe going out to greet him, you would have seen the same halacha like in Rus. Moshe would have said, hey, what are you doing here? Why don't you go home? You sure you want us to come with us? Why don't you go home? Doesn't say that. So the Medrash picks up on that, and the Medrash says, God says to Moshe, Moshe was going to do that, because that's the halacha. God says to Moshe, no, I'm bringing him close, you bring him close also. Similar to the case in Gemara and Shabbos, where there's this ger who comes before Hillel HaZaken, and he says, I want to convert on condition that what? On condition that I become the Kohen Gadol. Shammai kicks him out. Hillel brings him in. Everyone questioned, how did Hillel do that? Because you're not supposed to be Misgayer al Didei Tznai, right? So there, he brings down Tosfos answers. No, he knew it was going to work out. Eventually, he learned all the lachas. He learned that he couldn't be Kohen Gadol, and he'd be a good Ger. So he's saying here, even though there's a general rule that we don't accept Gerim for other reasons, we don't accept Gerim when the going is good, sometimes if we know that it's okay, and we know it's going to turn out all right, or God tells us to, we do accept Gerim. In the Megillah Esther, they didn't take the money. Was there Gerus? Some no's, some yeses, right? So if you look at the source on the bottom, this is Megillas Esther, Perek Chet, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Uvechol medina b'dina v'chol ir ve'ir mekom asher divar ha-melech v'daso magia. Every place where the king's word reached. Simcha v'sason la-Yehudim. There was great joy for the Jews. Mishte v'yom tov. Partying and good times. Good days. Holidays. V'rabim me'amei ha'aretz misyahadim. And many of the people were misyahadim. Kinafal pachat ha-Yehudim alehem. Because the fear of the Jews fell upon them. So how do you translate misyahadim? What? They became Jews. Misgayrim. That's what Rashi says. Flip the page. Rashi says misgayrim. They were converted to Judaism. If you look in the footnote just as an aside, it's interesting that, not surprisingly, that line is missing from many versions of Rashi, most likely censored out at different points in time when converting from other religions to Judaism was punishable by death. But that is the original version of Rashi. Interestingly enough, the Ralbag does not like that, probably because of this subtext that we're talking about, that we don't generally accept Gerim when the going is good. The Ralbag says, V'rabim me'amei ha'aretz misyahadim. Rotze lomar shehayu mar'im atzmam shehem Yehudim. They didn't really become Jewish. They just pretended they were Jewish because, as you said, like when the Lakers are winning, you pull your Laker jersey out of the closet and you go with it. So they pretended they were. It was a good time for people to think you were Jewish. Yeah.
Actually, it just says they were afraid. It doesn't say
because. The pasuk. You're saying, yeah, right. Okay, we'll get back to that. Right. That's an important point. We'll get back to that. Thank you very much. I would just like to point out, just for the pure enjoyment.
Second half of the Rabbi.
Oh, the second half of the Ralbag is saying what Rashi says. He's saying either this or that. Right? He also acknowledges that perhaps it means miskayir, but he's uncomfortable with it. So he has to. Now, if you look back to the first page, so obviously there's been a lot of controversy over Gerus, over conversion in the last 15, 20 years, probably even going back to the 50s and 60s. And the party line, rightfully so, is that we are very restrictive in when we accept Gerim. And generally we say we don't accept Gerim for other reasons. We don't accept Gerim for marriage. If there's any concern that the Ger is there for non-pure reasons, then we don't accept the Gerus. That is the Lichachila Halacha. B'dieved, after the fact, what the Halacha is, then you can go fight about that. And people do. But interestingly enough, if you look at the English translation of this particular English translation, I won't tell you who the publisher is, but it says, and wherever the king's command and his law reached that the Jews had gladness, had joy, a feast, and a holiday, and many from among the nations of the land made believe they were Jews because they had become afraid of the Jews. Which commentary did the English choose to follow? The Ralbag. Right. So you have Rashi. Most of the time, most English commentaries follow Rashi. Rashi is the majority predominant view. Many of the other Rishonim follow Rashi. You have a Das Yachid of the Ralbag, which does not appear in most, even most Mikras Gedolos on the Megillah. But shockingly enough, this particular English translation chose at this one point in time, I didn't do a scientific study and go through the entire English translation to see if they always follow Rashi or not, but I'm pretty sure they mostly follow Rashi. I did not say who the publisher was. Most, all of a sudden, all of a sudden, right here, they followed the Ralbag and said that Misya Hadin does not mean convert. It means what? It means they pretended to be Jewish. I don't know, but it seems like perhaps the reason there is because we know that there's this tension in terms of the whole issue of Gerus, and we do not want it out there that in plain English, in a text which everyone reads once a year, and lots of kids read, and this actually was a kid's Megillah. It's just interesting. Interesting, now in the 7 minutes that we have back to Inyanei Haggadah. So, if we go back to the Siach Yitzchak, right, left it in the car. Alright. If you go back to the Siach Yitzchak, he then says as follows. He says, wait a second. Geula brings or to the world. And that or creates a Kiddush Hashem, which brings tremendous respect for God, respect for Torah, and causes people to convert. Now, that's if you are a very truly spiritual person. But going back to the idea of people like success, the Siach Yitzchak says, you know what else causes people to convert? Seeing that they're on the winning team. And when people see that the Jews are A, victorious, but also have become wealthy, and also have established themselves, and are not beggars, and are not poor, you know what else that causes? That causes people to convert and join. And he says, if you look in the Mechilta, which incomprehensibly I did not put on the source sheet. If you look at the Mechilta, there's a fascinating Mechilta. The Mechilta says, I'll have to read it out loud. The Mechilta says, on the Pasuk, V'gam Erev Rav Ala Itam, and the Erev Rav came with them. Says Rabbi Yishmael, 140,000 Erev Rav came out with them. And then the Pasuk says, V'Erev Rav Ala Itam, V'tzon U'bakar. And tremendous cattle. And the Mechilta says, why the cattle? Because Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LaAvraham VeAchreichem Yitzu BeRchush Gadol. And afterwards you'll come out with great property. So the Siach Yitzchak asks, he says, wait a second. There were so many psukim earlier where the property was talked about. And the Mechilta doesn't say anything about the promise that God made to Avraham. Only here, in the context of the Erev Rav, that 140,000 people converted, all of a sudden the Mechilta says, and by the way, lots of Tzon U'Bakar. Why? Because God promised Rechush Gadol. Says the Siach Yitzchak, what you see the Mechilta is clearly linking is the conversion of the Erev Rav with the Rechush Gadol. It was because of the Rechush Gadol that the Erev Rav converted. And once they saw that the Jews had been victorious and the Jews were successful financially, that's when they converted. And now you go back to Avram Avinu. What was Avram Avinu's main task? What is he known for? What was his role? He is the flag bearer of what? Of monotheism, of Judaism. He went place to place to place to place. Right? He was the original Chabad. He opened up the restaurant. The people came in. They ate. He said, make a bracha. They made a bracha. They came. Avram was all about spreading the word of God and effectively converting people to monotheism. So what would be the greatest reward that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could give to Avram Avinu? Says, your children are going to go down into slavery. I'm going to judge the Egyptians. And since I know you don't care about the property, but what's the Rechush Gadol going to get them? The Rechush Gadol is going to further spread the word of God. And the Rechush Gadol is going to make people view Bnei Yisrael in a different light. And it's going to make people view God in a different light. And it's going to make people eventually convert. And for Avram Avinu, that is his ultimate objective. What greater schar could you get for that? What greater schar could you give to Avram than Beyotzeber Chush Gadol? Now, This is incredibly counterintuitive for us because, A, I think we're all incredibly ingrained with the idea that Judaism is not a proselytizing religion. And this goes very much counter to that because this implies that one of the goals of Yetzias Mitzrayim was to proselytize. So we have to think about that. Perhaps at different points in history, we were a proselytizing religion, or at least according, at least what Avraham's goal was to let the word of monotheism get out. And second of all, what's also troubling is there seems to be this incredible emphasis on financial success, which kind of makes us a little queasy because religion is all about spirituality and getting closer to God, and we downplay money. And this kind of brings us back finally to the end. Who says Havel Havelim HaKol Havel? Shlomo HaMelech. What was Shlomo HaMelech's net worth?
A lot,
right? When the pauper on the corner stands there and says to you, "Ah, that money, who cares? I never wanted money anyway. That's nothing." And we're like, "Well, of course, you've got nothing. So you say money's not bad." When Koheles, the wealthiest person in the history of the world, says, "By the way, I have had everything and I've thought about it, and you know what? Havel, Havelim, HaKol Havel, that's who you listen to." So says the Siach Yitzchak, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings Gula to the world, and after the people see the redemption, and then they see the wealth, and then they're brought closer to God, then they can speak from a position of authority and say, "You know what? The money brought us in, but now we see the truth. And the truth is Havel Havelim. The truth is that the money's not the key. The truth is that it's the closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But God is a realist. And God says, if you want, and Avraham Avinu is a realist, right? If you want to be successful, you have to give off a successful appearance. You have to make the people believe in you. You have to make the people believe that you're the winning team. And then you'll be successful." And with the 30 seconds left, going back to the Nitziv, I believe the distinction between Reb Chaim Berlin and Reb Bar Ilan is the Nitziv didn't care about history just for the interesting aspects of history. The Nitziv cared about history when it impacted the halachic analysis that was relevant. Who Shlomo HaMelech is and what he looked like and how tall he was is irrelevant. And the Nitziv would not have cared, like Reb Chaim Berlin says. But knowing that Shlomo HaMelech was incredibly wealthy, that makes you understand Mishlei and Koheles and everything that Shlomo HaMelech says better. The chiluk between Rav Meir Bar Ilan and Rav Chaim Berlin is that when history is relevant to enhancing your analysis of the halachic sources, like it was for the Nitziv in the context of his Shiltos, then of course he was in favor because that was Talmud Torah. Just to be curious, you know, what did the Nitziv wear? How tall was he? How short he was? What did Rabbi Yekiba look like? Says Rav Chaim Berlin, what would my father care about that? So perhaps that's pshat here. You have to know who Shlomo HaMelech is, know his wealth, know that he was this the ultimate wealthy one, and that he says Havel Havelim, and that gives you the true insight into the significance of wealth versus spiritual success. Okay.